You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Whether you're a longtime patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey. Visit us soon at our new State College location.
This is the Blue White Breakdown, the premier podcast for all things Penn State football.
Talk about culture. It's something that should show up in every aspect of your program.
It's the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live. Here are your hosts, Bob Flounders and David Jones.
Penn State fans, you know what time it is. Dave Jones is joining me. It's time for the Blue White Breakdown podcast as we creep towards the middle of March, which means we're getting very close, Dave, to you releasing your picks for the NCAA basketball tournament. I teased it a week ago. I'm still counting on you to make me some money in a couple of weeks, but are you getting excited now with the tournament getting closer?
Forget that. You're going to the Masters. Let's hear about
this. I am going to the Masters. You've never been
to Augusta before. Is Augusta ready for this?
It's a bucket list event for me.
Are you going to yell out stuff like on the
I don't
team?
Think so. I'll probably do real. You know, it's not like that Phoenix Waste Management tournament where they throw beer cans on the – You hit a hole. I think it's not that. See, that would be my tournament,
which is where you belong. Yeah,
I do. We talked about going that right around the time the pandemic hit. It's actually pretty affordable to go out there, but the Masters just came up. The opportunity came up, and barring any last minute setbacks, I'm going. I'm going for the whole week. One of my good friends has some connections, and he, I believe he's rented a house fairly close by, and he's got.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
This sounds fun. I've never been.
Well, I'll send you plenty of pictures.
You excited? Yeah.
Yeah, I am. I'm excited. I am. It's just one of those things I never thought I would get a chance to go to.
No. All right. Just do me one favor and then we'll get
Yeah, sure.
If you're on the green with Mickelson.
Yeah.
Just do something to bug him. I don't care what. You know, okay? Yeah.
I mean, I will.
When he's getting ready to putt, say, this for Bird and to share the lead. Okay.
Dave, I was at
a bird and share the lead.
Dave, I was at an event. To me, it is the gold standard of chirping. And I don't know if you're going to remember this. The Atlantic 10 tournament when St. Joe's was playing UMass. And I was there with my buddy Dan. We were at the game. UMass, I think, blew out St. Joe's. I think it was the mid-90s, and there was like a.
I seem to remember this. It was like
there was a big St. Joe's crowd, and they were really into it at the Palestra. Yeah. And there was like a. I don't know if there was a TV timeout, but it got a little quiet, and somebody else. Hey, Calipari, Patino needs a suit back by 10. And that was, like, to me, one of the great, great, great chirps of all time. I would not do that at the Masters, but I still remember that. That was just classic stuff.
There was a great – back when Bill Simmons, you know, 20 years ago, wrote really interesting, funny stuff, and these columns would go on forever. This had to be, like, 22 years ago. Our friend Chris Zarek showed me this story. I remember, and I'm like, who the hell is this guy? Because it was all about guys you didn't want to be around at baseball parks, all those annoying people around you. And then he did a little interlude on heckling. And he said he's not really a big heckler, but he got his nerve up one time because he got great seats at a Yankees game, a Yankees Red Sox game. He was a big Red Sox fan. And they were so good. They were looking at Frank Howard's ass the entire thing because he's the first base coach and he's huge. And
he was a big slugger from the 60s. Is that right?
Yeah, from the Senators, the Washington Senators, and a couple other. I think he was a Dodgers, but he was a 6'7", former Ohio State grad.
Buckeye.
6'7", had to be 280, and hit titanic home runs late in his career with the Senators, the late 60s.
Yeah.
At this point, he's a Yankees first base coach. So they're looking at his big rear as he bends over every and it becomes, you know, they get a couple of pops in him in their third, and it's the seventh inning, eighth inning, and he finally gets a nerve up. He's talking about heckling as the best when it's quick.
Yeah.
Short and sweet, a few words. You know, yep. If you get long sentences, that's not
forget it.
And he finally eighth inning starts, and Frank Howard bends over and he goes, "Hey Hondo," that was his nickname.
Yeah.
"Hey Hondo, nice ass." he broke up an entire session. Which is funny. That's funny stuff. And he said Frank Howard actually stood up like center. I had a heckling moment like that with Eric Schau, who we remember was a relief pitcher. He was a starting pitcher for the Padres.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, but he was known as a John Birch Society member. You know, the real right-wing kind of and I
you're kind of guy then. You're kind of guy.
Sure. Yeah. And Jerry Royster, and we, you know, we've got a few pops in us. The third baseline of the Cincinnati game, the Reds game, back in Old Riverfront. And we're talking to Jerry Royster over the dugout. And he's in the on deck circle. He was a first base side. And we're going, "Hey Royster, does Schau carry a gun?" And he looked around at us and laughing, you know, because he knew what we were talking about. And then we started working on Schau. And I swear to God, this happened. We were down the line just a little bit, and he fouled off a pitch right at us, and it went boom, you know, right off. And he looked over and smiled, and then did it again, and like he aimed it. I mean, yeah. I guess guys could probably do that, even pitchers. I don't know, but he looked over and laughed like both times.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah. I like it. Good heckling stories. Once in a while, I think. Now that we're in the offseason, we could share some of these stories on the podcast, because I think if they're interesting enough, Penn State football fans will not get super peeved at us. But Dave, there was something you showed me, but I wanted to talk to you about something that I read on The Athletic today. Did you check it out today?
I was looking at Bruce Feldman's
coaching
rings. Oh, really? He still has Franklin ninth.
All right. So you've seen it. So I wanted to ask you, because he had his list, and Stuart Mandel had his list. So last year, Bruce Feldman, who is a very, very close, I think, to James Franklin, had him at number 5 of his top 25. He's down to number 9. Before we get into the guys in front of him, Dave, I'll just read. It's only like one paragraph. I'm going to real quick. I'll read what Feldman wrote about James Franklin at number 9.
He kind of glossed over the last two seasons, didn't he?
Yeah, he said he's gone from being a top 5 coach to being close to slipping out of my top 10 after consecutive 4 and 5 seasons in Big Ten play. He's 11-11 overall. Before that, it was stellar. Franklin took over a program reeling from hefty sanctions and by year 3 had led the Nittany Lions to a Big Ten title. He's had 3 11-win seasons in Happy Valley and produced a lot of talent. His work at Vanderbilt was even more impressive, leading the Commodores to top 25 finishes in 2 of his 3 seasons. Vanderbilt hadn't finished in the top 25 in more than 60 years. Vanderbilt has gone 29-65 since he left. So just your thoughts just on James in his top 10, but not – I mean, he had to drop him, but what did you think of his list?
I looked at the list specifically to see what he did with Franklin.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge Bruce Feldman fan, and I consider him a friend. I don't understand that. I don't understand it. Do you? I mean,
yeah, he's got Luke Fickell behind him at 10. That's to me.
That was the next thing I saw, was Luke Fickell right behind him. I how can you at this point? I don't see how you can.
Matt Campbell at 13. That surprised me.
Completely underperformed the last couple of years, and I don't get it. I don't understand it, and I guess a lot of those guys really value recruiting.
Yeah.
They deal with the national writers. They deal with the two things that are huge. They deal with coaches, their agents, and they deal with player value. And sometimes not so much with the results on the field. It's almost like something else I want to talk about is that combine guys, they become so infatuated with metrics
Yeah.
They don't look at the tape. I mean, that's the kind of thing this seems to be to me, but I haven't spoken to Bruce about it. I don't understand it, and I couldn't do it. I wouldn't even put him in the top 20, would you?
Now you got me thinking. I'm looking at some of the guys that are behind James that I think should be in front of James based on the last 2 years, and I would agree with you. I wanted to tell you, though, two things. Bo Pelini didn't make the list. I know that upset you. My man PJ Fleck checks in at number 21. I think, you know what? I think he's better than the number 21 coach in the country. I really do.
Yeah, he's annoying, but that has nothing to do with results. Right. I mean, that's correct. A backwater. That place is a backwater. I didn't think he could do what he's done, and he's made them fairly respectable. I thought he'd be out of there by now to someplace like UCLA or some. Mm-hmm. You know, he always struck me as kind of a Todd Graham kind of guy who's going to parlay a couple of good years at a place like Minnesota into a big contract someplace. But you can't argue with the results so far at Minnesota. In Minnesota,
yeah,
people don't realize it has the longest Rose Bowl drought in the league. Other, you know, we're not counting Rutgers or Maryland, of course, but everybody else, it's the longest drought without a Rose Bowl. We're talking about 60 years now, all the way back to Sandy Stevens. It has never had any heritage. You know, they played in that garbage bag for so long, and where
the Metrodome.
Yeah. Was there any place that you've been? You've been doing this a while now. More annoying. You're 20 years on the Penn State beat.
It's an eyesore. It's an ear sore. Like that stupid music.
It is. Is that a word? Dump. It should be a word. It was an ear sore. That's what it was. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Would not make my top 500.
That just said it all about Minnesota football. It was just low rent for a while. They made a little move there with Glenn Mason, but every year, and you know, Lou Holtz used it as a way station for a little while between jobs before he got the Notre Dame job. But otherwise, it just had a succession of these guys. And for PJ Fleck to do what he's done and actually make an impact in the league, I think they also went down and didn't they beat Auburn in the bowl, right? A couple of years
ago? Yeah, the year they beat Penn State, then they beat up Auburn pretty good in the bowl game. It was one of the Florida bowls.
It was a great game, interesting game. Yeah. And Tampa? Is that the Tampa Bowl?
I don't know which one it was. It was either Tampa or the Citrus Bowl, I think. I don't think it was the other one. So, Dave, we're talking about Bruce Feldman's of The Athletic, who does a great job. His ranking of the top 25 coaches in college football. James Franklin came in ninth. Two more things before we get to Mandel's. A polarizing guy to me, he said, just missed the cut, and it's really hard to rank him because one year they're really good, and the next year they just – and we know why, but Pat Fitzgerald's not in the top 25. Really bad year last year, but they were really good 2 years ago. Just missed the cut. What do you think about Fitzgerald?
Before you go, Fitz, look – This is a program that were anyone else the coach there, I just can't even understand. I don't understand how Gary Barnett did it in 95. Then they actually won when Kevin Wilson started running the offense and they had a year there in 2000. And otherwise, he's won division titles two of the last 4 years. He's also done something I don't think has ever been done in college football. They were first, last, first, last in their division the last 4 years. Well, what does that tell you? Fitzgerald's coaching is not changing.
Right.
It's just that they have to build up to a certain level with the guys they have. And then he's able to get them over the hump, man, and win important games in that division. And sure, it's the West, but still, he was in two Big Ten championship games. And they had courted themselves pretty well, didn't they?
Yes.
In those games?
Yeah, they had Ohio State didn't play well in that game 2 years ago. They had him on the ropes until that Thurman guy ran for like the most yards ever, I think, in a single game performance, I think, for an Ohio State
back. He did it with Clayton Thorson at quarterback. I mean, what do you need? Who would you compare that to making a Super Bowl in the NFL? I mean, that's
Craig Morton.
Who was the guy with the Ravens? I can't think.
Trent Dilfer.
Of course, Trent Dilfer. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember, Dave, just real quick, we were talking about PJ Fleck and the Gophers. I am really, really looking forward to Minnesota visiting Beaver Stadium this fall. I think it's middle of the season, but this is, you know, I think this game is going to mean a lot to the Golden Gophers and Kirk Shiraka. And I think that's a team that, you know, if they protect the football, they could be a little bit tough to beat with their style of play.
They do something that it takes a certain structure and a certain kind of quarterback. And he had the perfect quarterback at Minnesota to do it. And then when he came in here, he didn't. I mean, Sean Clifford is not the kind of guy you want running that offense, is he? I mean, they tried to do it, but he really isn't.
Yeah, I mean, it was a weird season for a lot of different reasons, 2020, but those two losses to start the year really set them back, and they really had to restructure. During that winning streak, they won four in a row. They essentially just ran the ball two out of every three plays and took the ball out of his hands.
Yeah, well, Tanner Morgan was the perfect guy.
I think he's back, Tanner Morgan.
Did he come back? I didn't know.
I think he has another year. So it'll be Clifford, Tanner Morgan, and Clifford and the Purdue court, Aiden O'Connell. Those are two matchups of 30-year-old quarterbacks in the Big Ten. That's a lot at stake.
Well, the fact is Tanner Morgan could make quick decisions, quick throws, and you have to do that when you read in that offense because you're always reading the defense and deciding on the fly what you're going to do. And Morgan was really, really good at that. Shiraka was comfortable with him. Then he came into a situation here where, to me, that's a coordinator who really does have his own system and he has to fit. There aren't too many coordinators who can adapt all the time to the talent. It was hard for him to adapt to this talent here.
I think you are more in sync with Stuart Mandel's rankings. His top 25, he's got James Franklin 22nd. How about that?
Yeah, it's fine. What else?
Actually, PJ Fleck ahead of him. No surprise. Would you agree? Everyone's going to have this. Their top five is going to be some order of Nick Saban, Dabo, Kirby Smart, Ryan Day. He's got Brian Kelly of LSU 4. Well,
it depends on the definition of what this list is. Are you talking about a guy who has a certain level of talent and let's see what we can do with it? It's like the Iron Chef where you're given certain ingredients. Okay, what are we going to do with this? If you're talking about Ryan Day is in a situation where I think he's improved on Urban Meyer, but still it's Ohio State. What you do at Ohio State is completely different than what you do at Minnesota. I mean, the abilities to do that. So are we including the heritage and the program and all that stuff in how we rank? Because if we are, I don't understand how guys like Fleck and Fitzgerald aren't rated a lot higher because they're doing a lot more with less. I don't know what these lists are. I don't understand.
Well, I think though, so this is, he has in his top 10 at number 10. I think this speaks to what you're talking about. I think this is an interesting ranking at 10. I think it's a good ranking too. Jeff Monken at Army.
There you
Monken.
Go.
Stuart was real short and sweet at number 10. Monken led Army to more milestones last season, including a bowl win over Missouri that marked the Black Knights' first win against an SEC opponent since 1990. Army has won at least 9 games in 4 of the past 5 seasons, something it had done just 3 times in the previous 32 years.
Well, what about Mark Stoops, for instance?
He's number 14 he's right behind Harbaugh's 13. Mark Stoops of Kentucky is 14 on Mandel's list.
See, why is Harbaugh 13? This is what I'm talking about. Michigan has all the advantages, the incredible budget, the fans who care so much, 100,000 seat stadium, 110. Kentucky has none of that. Nobody cares. It's like Penn State basketball. And I mean, it's a lot like that. And he's done wonders in that place with not much. So I don't understand the rankings.
Dave, have you thought maybe in a couple of weeks you could come out with your top 25, reference this, and explain how you got to your rankings? I think it would be a fascinating read because you're clearly going to have a much different thought process than these two guys. These are national writers. You're a national writer. So would you think about maybe doing one of these in a couple of weeks or no?
I come to think of it, I wouldn't mind doing it. I mean – I'll tell you somebody else who is going to be, who's doing something with nothing. I mean, nothing is going to be, is Lance Leipold at Kansas.
Yeah, I think he's at 23 on Feldman's list. Stewart has him.
Well, anyway, you see what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I do see what you're getting at. Yeah.
For a long time, for instance, not lately, but Gary Patterson was this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
At Texas Christian. He would do a lot with just ordinary material, a lot of years, and did it a lot with defense, did it a lot simply with recruiting tough three-star guys. Wisconsin's done that over the years. To me, those are the coaches that deserve to be at the top of the list. I mean, you and I could take the money they have at Texas and probably do as well as they've done, right? I mean, they have all the resources in the world at Texas. The biggest athletic budget in the country, and it's not close. And this is the best they can do, you know?
I think your top 25 list would be a great read. Maybe if you do it between now and the, you know, maybe sometime in, you know, in April or something, time it up with spring football. I think it'd be a great read.
I would probably just do coaches to look out for is what I would do. And, you know, Leipold would be one. Jonathan Smith at Oregon State, another
one,
who's doing something with nothing. And there have been a couple of guys at Ole Miss who've done that, I think. Hugh Freeze did for a little while. Of course, it was – everyone in the SEC is pretty sleazy, and he got a name for himself. But Lane Kiffin did a great job there for a little while, too. To me, those are jobs – like jobs with ordinary resources where extraordinary things have been done or are about to done, or with, like, bad resources – you're being competitive. To me, those are the great coaches.
Dave, on any top 25 list you would do, whatever the criteria, what kind of list would you need to have for Bo Pelini to be in your top 25? What would it be a ranking of to make my man?
What are you saying? What
top 25 list would he be a no-brainer for?
What are you looking at? What are you looking at, my man? What are we laughing at here? Yeah.
All right, just mention somehow work Bo Pelini into it. I don't care how you do it. Instead of just missed the cut at the bottom, you could have had no chance of making
it. I worked him in last week, didn't you see, on the interviews?
Oh, no.
Best and worst interviews of all time? Yeah.
This is the Blue White Breakdown.
Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Whether you're a longtime patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey. Have questions? Visit us at Curaleaf.com or stop in to see us at any of our locations, including our new State College dispensary located at 1248 South Atherton Street. Let's talk medical marijuana and let our confidence become yours.
Are we going to talk about the combine and the
draft? Yeah, we are going to talk. I had to watch 2 days of it, Dave. I would love to talk about it.
I was all geared up for this, and then you keep throwing these flutter balls at me.
Good. Keeping you off balance.
What did you think of Jahan Dotson's 40 time? I know that's such a big deal. What did he run, a 4.42? What did he run?
Yeah, I think he ended up with a 4.41. There were a bunch of guys that cracked sub in the 4.3s, but you know, there's two things that I would say about the combine. There is track speed and there is football field speed, and I don't think they're necessarily the same. I think some guys are actually they look faster in a game and they run faster in a game, and also they probably run faster when someone's chasing them, but. I think Jahan Dotson is – I just don't think you're going to catch him anymore. So he is plenty fast to me. He's just – you know, he's not that much bigger than KJ Hamler was. I think he weighed in at like 176 or 177, and maybe he just wants to stay that way because he doesn't want to get bulky. But, you know, to spend a first-round pick on a guy that's, you know, under 180 pounds when you have, you know, 9, 10, 11 guys that are comparable to him, I just wonder where he's going to go. Everyone says late first round, Dave. But I think wherever he goes, he's going to be a player. But I would not be surprised if he slips into the early second round.
And you, because of his size, which is a factor in the NFL. When you get hit by big guys who are running fast. You might not draft him in the first round. Just say it. That's what you mean, right? Or even the second?
He's definitely, to me, he's a top
50,
30 to top 35 player. But okay. Again, it's going to be needs. It's going to be stuff like that. I mean, Penn State, Chris Godwin, I think, went in the third round for God's sake. So what are we talking about? It just depends. He's an incredible talent. He's going to be a really, really, really good NFL player. But there's just so many receivers, Dave, that are a little bit bigger that are putting up comparable,
There is, you're talking about their speed and then their speed.
Yeah.
There's agility and tests.
Yeah.
And then there's the ability to run routes, which is really what we're talking about. Right. I mean, how do you cannot quantify the deception and the ability to fool DBs.
Right.
And that's why the combine cannot measure it. And I'm getting to a guy who did not measure well at the combine, who we watched. And Ernie, of course, he always said, believe the tape, believe the videotape, believe what you see on the field, not this stuff in gym shorts. And this guy is a perfect example. He did not test well, and he was getting all sorts of substandard grades on agility and all the rest. Is David Bell from
Purdue. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. I thought you were talking about a Penn State guy because they all pretty much tested well. But I do remember I was wondering if you're going to bring up David Bell.
Yeah. And I mean, how much crap did he get from all the metrics geeks? This guy is going to go out and do what he has done, which is fool guys with his route running. He makes every stem look the same. And then he works off of that. He riffs off of that. He sees where guys are. He's really, really astute. I would be a little concerned about his size, too, because I don't know how durable he'll be. And he's going to have to be an inside receiver. I think you'd agree. But, man, the guy knows how to get open. And, you know, Cooper Kupp had a really lousy combine, didn't he?
Yeah.
Right?
I can't specifically remember how he did. It was a pretty high pick of the Rams, though, I think.
Well, he was a very ordinary combine. So the Rams knew what they were doing. And you know who else had a lousy combine because he has short arms? Did you hear this one? Offensive lineman? Yeah, he's got T-Rex arms. You didn't hear this?
I didn't.
He's an offensive lineman. Well, think of the most impressive offensive lineman last season in the Big Ten. Who would that be?
It wasn't Linderbaum, was it?
Yeah. Tyler Linderbaum. They're ganging up on Tyler Linderbaum. Oh, his arms are short. He's a center. Yeah. You don't need long arms as a center. He's not an offensive tackle. These people are geeks. I mean, they're geeks, and they can only talk about things that they can measure, that they can put numbers on. You need long arms if you're an offensive tackle, right? You don't necessarily need long arms if you're a center. It can't hurt you because you're constantly fighting guys off. Yeah. But this guy is an MF-er, and you know that's true. I mean, he is going to be a great player. You agree?
I don't disagree with you. I thought he was a tremendous player at Iowa. He played very well against Penn State. I really wanted to see Mustafer go against him, and he got hurt early in that game. But terrific center. I agree. And
Linderbaum hurt him. You know, Linderbaum's the guy who hurt him.
I think he was locked up with two guys in his knee caved is how I remember it. Linderbaum was one of the guys, though.
Yeah, yeah, Linderbaum.
And I'm with you though. Paralysis by analysis or analysis, whatever that is. These guys are getting way out of control with their analysis. It's like, come on. Did you watch any of it?
I just wonder how many of the player personnel guys or GMs even listen to them. It's kind of like the astronauts in the Apollo program. They're all hooked up. They're all hooked up with wires and crap. And finally, they just took it off and. You know, okay, my heart rate's 95. That's great. You know, let me fly the ship here. You know, it's kind of like that. They're going to get the groceries, and they're not going to necessarily take the list from these guys.
Yeah. And this year I just thought the coverage was lousy. Unless it was the 40-yard dash, they didn't show a lot of the other events. Not that there were a lot of great events. A lot of people just didn't really want to do all the events. I know there's a lot of value in the players just meeting with teams, and we never get to see that. I would love to see some of those interviews, but
yeah, wouldn't that
a 40-yard dash to me is just, I just think there's a lot more to football than running a really fast 40.
although Jordan Davis is 40.
Yeah, the Georgia guy. Holy mackerel. I don't know how. I don't know how.
341 pounds, man, moving real fast. Do you remember that play?
And jumping real high.
Remember that play against Michigan where he just was in pursuit behind the play and kaboom on that Michigan kid? Yeah, that was.
What a talent. But to me, one of the most fascinating things about him, Dave, is as he gets older, will he be able to keep his weight under control?
Right.
Because he was, I think he was quite a little bit heavier during the season. Once you get paid, you know, is he going to be 345 or is he going to be 405? And I hope he can, I would just want to see him at 340. I want to see what he can do, because if he gets too heavy, he's going to lose some of that.
You know, the other thing is, it's like Zion Williamson, the torque on your limbs at that size is so intense. I think injuries just tend to happen in guys that big moving that fast. I don't know.
I'm with you, but you just saw the best of him in terms of I don't know that he'll ever be more athletic than he was at the combine. That was just incredible. All right, I think we've exhausted this bit about the combine, but don't forget about your list of up and comers or risers in the NFL or the.
I want to mention something I'm doing. I'm doing something I sent you, and we won't get into it now because we're done.
Yeah.
But a list of guys from the fourth round on from Penn State, who played a long time. Even it was instructive to me how many of these guys, especially near scrimmage. You know, you could probably write a book about Penn State running backs who were big busts, who were drafted real early. But on the other hand, there's a lot of guys who were drafted in the lower rounds at Penn State who made long careers for themselves. So that's what this is going to be about in a couple of days. I think I'll have it up on Thursday morning, Wednesday morning.
Don't forget about those NCAA basketball picks, Dave. Yep. Don't forget about them.
All right,
that's it for the Blue White Breakdown. He's Dave Jones. I'm Bob Flounders. We will see you next week.
See you, boys.
This has been the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live.